All right. Just in response to the independent review conducted by the previous auditor general, Shaket Faki, into the Resilient Group and specifically some of the trading in the shares that had been the subject of reports by 361, Arcam Capital, Navigare. I'm joined now by the founder of 361, Sy Jacobs, in studio to get his response to the independent review. Good to have you in the studio, Sy.
Thank you very much, Warren, and pleased to be here.
So just to kind of iron things out here, 361 has a position in the Resilient Stable. And some people will be saying, well, the only reason you came out with this report and you're carrying on like this is because you have a vested interest. Just tell us, are you still have a short position in the Resilient Stable at the moment?
We do have a short position. And I think there's obviously quite a distinct difference between the reason we're short. I mean, we quoted before saying we're short because we're negative. We're not negative because we're short. And that's a real distinct difference in our view.
So a couple of people have made the allegation, well, this is a short and distort campaign you're running. What's your response to this? And if you are not a short and distort campaign, how does your position differ from that?
Well, I think had we been one of those short and distort campaigners, I think it would have been pretty obvious that at the time of us, our report being leaked, we probably would have covered our position, you know, much like that's what short and distort campaigns are about. If you look at our process, we have done proper fundamental work into the company, all aspects of all four companies, and we've had a short position for some time, even over parts of the previous years. And into this year, we have a short position, and we're still holding that short position. So, yes, that short position has altered slightly over the course of the period, but we believe in our research, and as you can see from our report and many other reports that are out in the market, there are many consistent themes that run throughout the marketplace.
Primarily, the independent review was commissioned in response partly or mainly, I think, to your report. We also saw reports from other brokerages and houses that did not have positions in Resilient. But what did you make of the scope of the review that Resilient established to look into this?
We found the scope to be far too narrow, first of all. It initially only was around a six-month period from July to December. Mr. Faki did indicate, however, that he had extended the period to the beginning of 2017. We still found that period to be inadequate, as we believe many of the allegations we and other asset managers have made have spanned over many, many years. Secondly to that, it is very difficult and for Mr. Faki to have done a proper thorough investigation, as he doesn't really or didn't really have the tools to do that. I mean, we do know that the JSC and the FSCA, the old FSB, do have all those records at their fingertips, but it is impossible for the likes of Mr. Faki to get access to those records to ultimately do a proper investigation on the trading that has happened in these companies.
So Irene, really, the only way this should really be cleared up is by the likes of the JSC and the FSCA, in your opinion?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they have all the tools and information and the investigative abilities, and we do know they have been investigating these transactions for quite a while. They haven't yet obviously come to any conclusions, but they have informed the market at the end of March that they were busy with, in fact, four separate investigations that are underway into the group.
The review ran for about a period of 6 weeks. Obviously, he was talking to executives at Resilient. He was talking to, I think, some of the trustees of the Siaka Education Trusts, as well as ancillary parties and people. When did Mr. Faki get in touch with you?
So to our surprise, I mean, given the fact that at the outset, it looked like the investigation was brought about because of ours and some other reports in the market, we would have expected Mr. Faki to contact us to discuss the contents of our report very early on in his investigation. Only right at the end of the 6 weeks, in fact, last Friday afternoon, Mr. Farke called me. I was away at the time. He then said to me that he had noticed my comments in the Financial Mail about our surprise that we were not interviewed. He offered to slip in an interview with me on the Monday afternoon. I was away and thought maybe at the time I could make a plan to come back for that interview. I then subsequently sent a mail to him at 3 p.m. that afternoon, which Mr. Farke said he never received at the time. That mail informed him that we'd be very happy to meet when my counsel was back and my team to discuss the report on the following Thursday morning. I was then informed by him that he never received that email. I did send it subsequent to him, sent it twice more to him. He said he never received those either, but he did still agree to meet me on the Monday afternoon. I said that wouldn't work for us, and he informed me that unfortunately time was up and he couldn't wait beyond Monday afternoon, which I found quite surprising because it had been running for 6 weeks already. What would the difference be to an extra few days? We believed we had very relevant information. Subsequent to that, on Monday, we sent Mr. Farke a letter that we'd still be happy to meet on Thursday under certain conditions, a lot of those being around, in fact, widening the scope of the investigation and dealing with some of the other allegations that we had found in some of the research work we have done. But unfortunately, we noticed the sense on Tuesday, which basically was just a summary of the findings, which also detailed the fact that they were still happy to meet with us on Thursday. But we find that rather an empty invitation. I mean, once the findings were out, the sense announcement was made, we didn't really feel there was a point, in fact, to meet with Mr. Farke post that announcement. We also found it quite interesting that actually no report has actually been issued, but rather just a summary of the findings that are out. So we would look forward to being able to see actually what work was actually done, what investigative work was done around this report, and to see if there was really any real independent verification from third parties, like broking accounts, etc., bank accounts, trying to follow the cash to ensure if there were any trades that were maybe suspicious in nature.
So just to get this right, so he got in touch with you only on Friday afternoon for the first time?
That is correct.
And then we had the announcement on SENS on Tuesday afternoon that the investigation had been completed. Why didn't you want to meet with him on Monday? You said you were?
Well, I was away. I was actually only flying back on Monday afternoon. The fact is the two individuals who compiled that internal research document and have done most of the work into this group were also not available to meet on the Monday. And I thought it would be no point in myself just going to a meeting without being properly prepared. So myself, my counsel, plus the two individuals would have been available on Thursday morning to meet with Mr. Farke. However, the findings of the report were published soon after that on Tuesday.
While I was interviewing him live on the radio yesterday, he said that he had received an email saying that you no longer wanted to meet. What was the basis for that?
Well, on the back of the fact that the report was now out, or the findings of the report is in fact out, and there was also, as I mentioned previously, we had sent a letter on Monday to say that we would meet with Mr. Farke, but now the investigation was already finalised, so the point in meeting in our mind was rather pointless. And in fact, we had put certain conditions in our letter to our meeting, and there was no response in respect of those conditions. So, you know, for both those reasons, we really felt there was no point in pursuing a meeting anymore.
So just coming back to that, the statement that was published, the summary of the findings of the report, what were your thoughts on that?
Well, I think the fact is, you know, we know what was in our report, and we don't really find any information in that sense announcement that leads us to believe that the details of our report were dealt with satisfactorily. I mean, our report really had various aspects to it. I mean, number one, it dealt with the extreme valuations of the securities relative to the tangible net asset values of the underlying properties. There was no mention of that really in the findings of Mr. Farke's report. So we feel there was really no detailed work done around, you know, how those share prices came about and why this group trades at a very high rating relative to global REITs and local REITs. Secondly, in our report, we dealt about the accounting issues around a lot of interest income that was being accounted for in the income statement as a result of the loans made to the Siaka Trust, as well as to staff members. That doesn't seem to be dealt with at all, but Mr. Farkey did say he never dealt with the accounting issues. But at the same time, he does give some recommendations, we believe, to the board, maybe around the Siaka Trusts, etc., at the end of the commentary in the SENS announcements. Also, we raised the issues of Mr. Oberholzer and the trading around that. We still do not know what various investigative work was done around those various 4K companies, why there were 4K companies in the first place, why there was a funding arrangement with Mr. Hafner. Mr. Oberholzer had previously said he was the sole shareholder of these entities. We find that all really too inconsistent and are not happy unless we can see the detailed work that was done by which hopefully would be available one day in the full report.
The K2012 companies certainly continues to puzzle me, because it was to our request that we asked who the shareholders of that business were. Is that unusual? I mean, Si, you've been in the market 20 plus years. Have you seen arrangements like that where it appears that people are attempting to conceal their identities through vehicles and arrangements such as that?
I haven't actually seen much like this. No, it is interesting though. If for the listeners, if they do go back to even previous articles, one was made by Noseweek in 2011. It would seem that this type of trading activity within the Resilient Group had taken place before. In fact, there was a company identified called Amber Peak, where Rock Hafner was the sole shareholder. And it was reported that monies were lent to Amber Peak, and Amber Peak traded aggressively in Resilient, Pangbourne Property Fund and Capital Property Fund, if I'm correct. That type of sequence of events seems to be very similar to what has happened now with Mr. Oberholzer's accounts. And another issue we raised in our reports, which is really not dealt with, is the timing of those transactions. You know, Mr. Oberholzer's transactions in these K companies seems to take place very close before a capital raising is done on behalf of the group. And those trades take place in the company before those capital raises. You know, is that just lucky timing, or is there something else behind that? So we would have liked more investigations done around particularly the timing of those transactions before the capital raises.
What's your understanding of Mr. Hafner and his relationship to any of the Resilient executives?
Well, who
is this guy?
We've never met Mr. Hafner. I was in my previous life a auditor with Kessel Feinstein. We did some work on Supreme and Supreme Investments. We know that Mr. Hafner was a financial director, I think, at the time of Supreme. Supreme in itself was found to be a very problematic business, which was raising, I think, bonds it was, from unsuspecting investors. There were court cases over. I think Mr. Hafner was in fact convicted, may have even gone to jail at the time. And, you know, we don't know much about that. There, you know, really was many, many years ago. But at some stage, there was a relationship between Des De Beer and Rock Hafner. And that has been reported on as well. And we're not sure what that, you know, if that relationship is still around or not. But it does seem very peculiar to us that the same type of trading patterns are still happening in the recent times, as have been reported on in the past.
Mr. Farkey did say that Mr. Hafner had ceased a business relationship with Des De Beer, but obviously that that we're not sure. I'm not sure where else that relationship has gone. Do you know if he has any relationships with any other executives, of the executive team in the Resilience stable?
We're unaware. I mean, as I said, we've never met Mr. Hafner, and we're not sure, you know, of his whereabouts, and we've only, you know, read articles that have been previously put out by other media companies.
Well, just to kind of round this off, Si, I think where does this go? Where does this need to go from here? We've got protagonists on the one hand, and there's now an independent review that's been conducted. You've aired your concerns about it. How does a company like Resilient have this cleared up? I mean, who needs to do that, and how do we sort the situation out?
Well, I think what we need to wait for here is the investigation that is underway by the JSC and the FSCA. I'm not sure how long that will take, but really, as I've said before, they have all the tools at their fingertips, and we look forward to reviewing, I suppose, their findings and seeing what their conclusions are. And I suppose post that, we'll know where we stand.
All right, that was Si Jacobs, the founder of 361. Thank you for your time.
Pleasure, thank you.